Good morning, everyone. Welcome to Live Dharma Sunday for August 11th, 2013. Koyo Kubose here. I'm so glad you joined us. Well, my brother, as I mentioned last time, my brother and his wife celebrated their 50th wedding anniversary last week. My sister and her husband came in from Chicago to help celebrate. They're still here with us on the visit. And my sister, for several years now, has been a raw vegan. There's a big topic, I think, diet as related to religion. Diet, of course, related to health. And food and its preparation makes up a big part of our lives. My sister being a raw vegan, of course, vegan means no meat, no dairy. And raw means they don't eat cooked food. Anything that's over so many degrees, 110 degrees or something like that, they don't. So it's raw vegan. My son, oldest son, is on a GAPS diet, G-A-P-S, which is a form of a diet that recognizes that our gut, everything in the gastrointestinal system is a crucial part of our health. Well, my mom used to say, we are what we eat. So Adrian really experiments with vegan recipes. I have to admit, a lot of them taste great. Over the years, some people come to think of it, they are Buddhist vegetarians, not necessarily, although there are a lot of Buddhists who on moral grounds, said, gee, I could really, we could really make a case. Why should we inflict suffering and support meat aspects? But it's not really essential to being a Buddhist. Now, what you call a flexitarian. I'm very flexible, but over the years, I've often experimented with cutting out meat, sugar, and desserts, and maybe alcohol. And there's also the no white diet. No white means no sugar and no flour, simple carbohydrates. And there's no doubt that I could myself lose a little weight. But years come and go. Sometimes I could go for several months on certain kinds of diets. But I don't take it too over seriously, I guess. So I'm a flexitarian. I could, whatever is being presented and cooked in our household, I'd go along with it. I'm not very rigid on things. But the diet is a very interesting aspect. Of course, the Theravada tradition, they don't eat any meals after noon, no solid foods. Jewish tradition, certain restrictions, Muslims, and same thing, or Catholics with no fish on Friday, no meat on Friday, and all these kinds of things. Giving the blessing at mealtime. There's a lot that associates spirituality in the all-important area of diet. Even if one does not restrict one's diet in any way. I think it's good spiritual practice to promote one's awareness of one's relationship with the area of food, which sustains us, enables us to live. And the observation has often been made that, you know, it's a shame that, you know, no matter what kind of strict diet you adopt, you're always living at the benefit of others, other living organisms. You cannot survive. Some people say, well, you know, if you're a vegetarian, well, plants are living things too. So no matter what you do, you're always taking advantage of or depending upon other living beings, whether it's plants or animals. So we should at least have the awareness of that fact, the reality of the fact that in order for me to live, other lives are taken. And I think a deeper spirituality or spiritual realization is not that thank you for the food. And it's interesting, the association of being thankful or grateful. One former Christian said, he noticed right away that in Christianity, it's always grateful to, you know, grateful to God. Whereas in Buddhism, it's always grateful for. You know, I had never thought about this, but I guess when you come from a different religious background, you can see the contrast right away. Grateful to and grateful for. And in the same way, when I remember if you're teaching children to be grateful at mealtime, remember one friend said, telling the kids, be grateful to the cook. That's an important thing. Whereas we always say, well, I'm grateful for this food and all the conditions that the farmers, the truck drivers, and even grateful for the rain and the sunshine, for everything that the reality of what enables the food to be brought to the table. So I don't know exactly what the implications of that difference between the preposition of to or for might imply. But I think a deeper spiritual realization is not just thankfulness or gratefulness for the food, but kind of a empathy or compassion or even sorrow that lives are taken in order for us to live. Because in a way, maybe this, I shouldn't say shallow, but or superficial kind of gratitude where, well, thank you for the food, thank you for this, thank you for that. But more of a element of sorrow in that, gee, empathizing with food, you know, aspect of food industry, which sometimes inflicts suffering on other living beings just for our convenience, especially not just to feed us, but for our convenience, crowding the chickens and, you know, or dispatching them with less than kind methods and just in the name of efficiency and all this stuff. So it's a big topic, and the reason it was on my mind, of course, is the raw vegan aspect that experimenting and household use. Well. I want to go on and introduce today's guest who's going to give us a Dharma glimpse. This is William Toyo of Southern Cal. He lives in Southern California, and he's part of our current lay minister 6 group, LM6, which is just about completed a year of their 2-year program. So, without further ado, William Toyo.
Thank you very much, Sensei Koyo Kibose. For the last year and a half, I have been watching a bridge being built near my complex. It was completed this past month. It's a short bridge, about half the length of a football field. But the construction of this bridge kind of drew my attention to what bridges bring to us and their connection to Buddhism. After all, Buddhism has a lot of bridges, if you think about it. Also in Reverend Koyo's Bright Dawn book, he expresses that our spiritual journey, a bridge helps us travel from the shore of ignorance to the shore of wisdom. That a bridge is a concrete way to express the moment of crossing over any significant experience can function as a bridge whereby one can cross over and become a different person and live a new life. Bridges can be an exclamation point on our spirituality. They may also be transformational in the way we break through our mental blocks that we sometimes face. Bridges can completely change the frame of your mind. They might bring in visions or personality in ways that you may not experience otherwise. I think also that practice can be one of our most important bridges that we can cross each day to help us on our spiritual path. Meditation is also a bridge that we cross that allows us to travel within ourselves to find the truth. We can also use chanting as a bridge to help us cross over to the other shore. A bridge is a structure that allows persons or vehicles to proceed over obstacles like rivers, valleys, gorges. A spiritual bridge will let us proceed over obstacles that are in our spiritual path. The Buddha mentioned building bridges for public good is as an example of a meritorious deed. Crossing a river is frequently used as a metaphor for the spiritual endeavor in the Tripitaka, as we all have read. In Buddha's time, it was known that people and horses vied to cross over rivers in small boats that then capsized, drowning their passengers and doing them harm. Also, sometimes, death occurred in this, crossing the river, and the animals also. We have learned from Buddhist teachings that bridges were constructed to prevent the suffering and harm, and even death of travelers. Also, the Buddhist enthusiasm for building roads and bridges had a significant role to play in developing the trade, the communications, and the spread of Buddhism, and the lessening of the hardship of life. Records show that building bridges as a religious practice became very popular in China and Japan. The Japanese monk Dosho was a famous road and dam and bridge engineer. One of Japan's most famous pre-modern bridges, the Elegant Spectacle Bridge in Nagasaki, was designed and built by the monk Mokusan Yujo. Excuse me if I kind of messed up that name. But that was back in 1634, almost 379 years ago. This structure was the first stone arch bridge in Japan and is still in use today. It was given its name because when its two arches are reflected in the water, it looks like a pair of spectacles. I did not realize this when I was doing the draft of my Dharma glimpse, but I'm giving this Dharma glimpse on the anniversary of the dropping of the atomic bomb on Nagasaki. So this bridge actually survived an atomic bomb when pretty much everything else was destroyed. That was 68 years ago. I was 35 days old. But coming back to the present, I've been known to get carried away with historical texts. I do know that my encounter with two different bridges in the past not only started me on my spiritual path, but had quite an effect on my life and compassion for others, and started me on my journey to Buddhism. The first was in 1965. This is when I marched across the Edmund Pettus Bridge in Selma, Alabama, with Martin Luther King Jr. and thousands of other nonviolent protesters. This is when the Buddhist term dukkha arose within me. Not being a Buddhist layperson at the time, I was still very much aware of the suffering, hatred, pain, and even death that was so prevalent at the time of civil unrest in the South. I knew in my heart that I needed to be part of this movement and draw attention to the suffering and pain of a race that was being discriminated against. I am sure that the reincarnation of the Buddha was walking that same path with us all of that day. Today, this would be called a bridge to engaged Buddhism, which is a growing and important part of Western and American Buddhism. The second bridge comes even closer in contact with Buddhism. That was the Golden Gate Bridge. The Golden Gate Bridge became what I think of as my path to Buddhism. This is when I began my journey and Zen training in San Francisco. I would journey across to the Golden Gate Bridge. That even seems to have a spiritual reference to it, Golden Gate. I would be on my way to join my fellow Buddhists at Green Gulch Farm and Zen Center located near Muir Beach. This is where I would meet Suzuki, Alan Watts, Richard Baker, and many others that would influence my Buddhist teachings. Living in the city, I also would jog across the bridge each morning, and oftentimes I would look down and see thousands of small white caps dancing on the water below. I would let my imagination see thousands of little Buddhas giving me safe passage to the other side. In life, we often find ourselves crossing bridges, whether they be mental or physical. We can add them to our spiritual toolbox. This is all part of a ritual practice that we can develop. Instead of just crossing the bridge to get to the other side, I think we must always be aware of each moment and be grateful for the bridges that we cross or choose to cross to allow us to get to the other shore. The Reverend Gomez Kubuse used his spiritual bridge in transmitting the essence of Buddhist thought. As Reverend Koyo continues to do the same today, with the Bright Dawn Center of Oneness. There's a quote from Thich Nhat Hanh. It says, "Breath is the bridge which connects life to consciousness, which unites your body to your thoughts. Whenever your mind becomes scattered, use your breath as a means to take hold of your mind again." I thought it was a very good quote, and I often go back to it often. I will leave you with a haiku for you to ponder on until next time. Although there is a bridge, my horse goes through the water. Until next time, Namu Amida Butsu. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Bridge is such a good analogy, nice spiritual tool. As I listened to the Dharma Glimpse, I was reminded of, in Japanese Buddhism, the religious holiday of Ohigan is very prevalent. And Ohigan is observed in the spring and autumn equinoxes, so twice a year. Equinoxes, of course, are when the days and nights are equal in length, temperature is temperate, and for roughly a one-week period, it's a time when Buddhist followers should pay particular attention to self-reflection and deepen their spirituality. Sometimes it's said that it's a time to concentrate on or utilize the six paramitas, six virtues, dana, which means charity, not just giving of material things, but giving of one's time, effort, and so forth. There's kshanti, patience, and perseverance. There's virya, vigor, and it's interesting, isn't it? Sometimes you think of Buddhist virtues or religious virtues as calmness and patience, but also the Buddha was very, and Buddhism was very, is very pragmatic. You can't accomplish anything without some vigor, some enthusiasm, some strength there, actively. So one of the paramitas addresses that. And then there's dhyana, meditation. All of these six parameters of virtues. Sometimes the analogy is made that they're like six logs that are lashed together, and you can make a raft and cross over the river of suffering, or sometimes called the river, you know, of birth and death, of dualities, and go to shore of oneness, wisdom. So, well, we got to the time when a follower could concentrate on the six parameters, or one of them, or and so forth. So it's a very religious and cultural observance in Japan and in Japanese Buddhist temples in America too. The word Ohigan refers to the fact of crossing over. Heighten our awareness that we can cross over. The idea of crossing over, although it's a dualistic, coming from a dualistic frame of reference, from this shore to the other shore, you know, there's only one shore, really, one life. But the way we, our attitude, our perspective, is what changes hell to heaven, or this shore to the other shore. So we don't have to necessarily take it literally. Although I think that we could use that kind of dualism of cross over, make a difference, make it impactful for you. So it's not something gradual, but say, I'm here, I'm going over there. And when you do cross over, your life is changed. You should have that kind of determination. In recent years, I've started to observe Ohigan times. Sometimes different temples might have special guest speakers on religious holidays. So it's quite common that, say, for Ohigan, in addition to Buddha's birth and death and enlightenment day, you know, those are the three major Buddhist religious holidays, but also for Ohigan and other important holidays, we might invite a guest speaker. So the times when I am invited to speak someplace, if it's for Ohigan, the last few years I've been doing something that I like, music and movies, you know, bringing popular culture, relating it to spiritual teachings. And I love Paul Simon's Bridge Over Troubled Waters. And that's a very great song. So I put it on CD, and a couple of times now I've played it from the podium as a speaker. I said, this is the greatest Ohigan song. If you listen to the lyrics, I lay me down over troubled waters. I'm laying me down for you to cross over the troubled waters. And we all have troubled waters in our lives. You know? And it's not, when I say I am laying myself down over troubled waters, this is the Dharma speaking, not to anthropomorphize, or not in the sense of deity doing something, but the Dharma, the universe, the reality of things, that kind of a sentiment. Wow. Because the Dharma is about reality, and indeed, with our proper attitude, we could see that the Dharma never lets us down. And the Dharma is like a bridge over troubled waters, can help us in our lives. So I introduced the song, and then I mentioned, you know, to the congregation, I said, imagine that this is the Dharma speaking. To me, I really liked it, like this. Listen, and here's the Dharma saying, nothing to worry about. When you're down and out, hey, when night falls so hard, I will lay you down like a bridge over troubled waters. And I would play it and just listen and experience the power of music. Under ordinary circumstances, I might play it for you. But, of course, we don't have permission to play it, so we won't. But also, when you try to play it over the, you know, electronic lines, it doesn't come out right. The sound quality is not there. But if you're playing it live on a CD player and it's coming through the PA system in the chapel, it's nice. Nice fidelity. And it's very moving to me when you listen to that piece of music. To bring home the aspect of bridges. And sometimes I have, and you know, one time, the first time I played it was in a temple in Southern California in Orange County. And afterwards, usually a major religious holiday, they want a lot of congregation people to come to this important religious observance. So they serve lunch. Afterwards, talk about food, okay? And so we're in the social hall after the service, enjoying the Ohigan lunch, and I was surprised how many people came up to me talking about that bridge over troubled waters. And what always impacts me is the different listeners are coming from very different parts of their lives. One of them came up to me and he was a person that was struggling with a transsexual orientation, and he had recently had an operation to change his gender from a male to a female. So this had you could see hear some tears in his eyes, and he was saying, you know, that's really crossing over in his life from a male to a female. And how within that community, transsexual community, they suffer a lot. Society's stigmas and their own personal struggles. The song really impacted him. So in a lot of ways, I was very touched and it deepened the teachings about bridges over troubled waters and crossing over what's involved. I remember sometime I mentioned, wow, that's the greatest Ohigan song. The greatest Ohigan movie is Thelma and Louise. If you look at that, think about that movie, there's a scene in there. It's only about 5 seconds long, but it's where Thelma says she's crossed over. She crossed over from her former life of being a wife of a sort of a verbally abusive husband and the gender restrictions that society conditions women and so forth. And she says she can't go back to that life. She and Thelma, of course, ran off on a road trip. And Thelma says, I'm not going back to that life. I'm liberated, in a sense, right? What her comment was, she looked Louise in the eye and she says, I've crossed over. That should be inspirational to us in every individual spiritual life. I crossed over from being having my ego self-centered part of my life, and I'm going to have the Dharma be the center of my life. That's crossing over. Thank you very much. That's all for today's broadcast. Till next time, you keep going, and you have a very beautiful crossing over day. Bye-bye.